IP Fridays, Episode 6.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of IP Fridays. Our names are Ken Suzanne and Rolf Clayson, and this is the podcast dedicated to intellectual property. It does not matter where you are from, in-house or private practice, novice or expert. We will help you stay up to date with current topics in the fields of trademarks, patents, design and copyright, discover useful tools, and much more.
Thank you very much for tuning into another episode of IP Fridays. We are very glad that you tune in to this episode. First of all, if you are listening to this on an iOS device, please visit ipfridays.com/iTunes to subscribe to the podcast if you didn't already do so and leave us a review. We would be really grateful if you could do that. And also, if you want to tweet about us, you can tweet about us easily by going to www.ipfridays.com/love. But now I will tell you what we have in store for you today. So we will talk about the latest developments in the Budweiser fight, the worldwide fight over Budweiser trademarks between the Czech Republic and the US. And we will have the latest updates about the new Canadian Trademark Act. And we also tell you about Mr. Softy. And I can hear his ice truck already.
The familiar chimes of a Mr. Softy truck are a delight to the ears of many. Mr. Softy is a well-known ice cream truck business that licenses its various trademarks to franchisees, who then own and operate Mr. Softy ice cream trucks using those trademarks. The marks are numerous, the name Mr. Softy and its logo, the Mr. Softy ice cream jingle, and the design of the Mr. Softy trucks, white trucks with blue horizontal stripes and blue wheels that include an ice cream cone head with a red bow tie and a blue jacket and various phrases promoting sundaes, shakes, and the very best ice cream products. Dimitrios Sirkos is a former Mr. Softy franchisee who operated 16 Mr. Softy trucks within New York City. Sirkos eventually stopped paying royalties and following the terms of the Mr. Softy franchise agreements, and the company decided to terminate his franchises. This didn't stop Sirkos from continuing his ice cream sales. He rebranded his trucks as Master Softy or Soft King trucks, retaining the color scheme, slogans, and similar ice cream cone head character as the official Mr. Softy vehicles. Mr. Softy is now suing Sirkos in federal court in the Southern District of New York, claiming that he is not only infringing on their trademarks, but also violating a non-compete provision preventing Sirkos from competing with Mr. Softy for 2 years after their franchise agreements were terminated. Mr. Softy was granted a preliminary injunction on June 5th, preventing Sirkos from operating his trucks within his former franchise territories, as well as any other franchise territory within a 5-mile radius. Judge Swain, applying an 8-factor test to determine whether Sirkos' trucks could be confused with Mr. Softy's trucks, found that all 8 factors were met. The Mr. Softy logo and the trade dress create a distinctive and arbitrary mark, and the Sirkos trucks were strikingly similar to the Mr. Softy trucks by using the same color scheme, similar anthropomorphized ice cream character, and identical slogans, that being Very Best and World's Best. Judge Swain also found the non-compete to restrict Sirkos' operations, although she limited the scope of the non-compete to cover only Sirkos' former territories and other territories within a 5-mile radius. This injunction has not ended the dispute, as Mr. Softy filed a contempt motion against Sirkos on June 12th. A mere week after the injunction was issued. Mr. Softy hired private investigators to determine whether Sirkos would cease his operations, and they found that he had instead continued to sell ice cream from Master Softy trucks in the prohibited areas. Mr. Softy then asked the court to award them the profit Sirkos made from those trucks since the injunction was ordered, and to compensate their attorney and private investigator fees in connection with the contempt motion. Cercos's response to this contempt motion had been to remove the word master and the ice cream cone head mascot from his trucks, while still continuing to operate within the prohibited areas. A hearing on June 24th in front of Judge Swain determined that Cercos's efforts were not sufficient to avoid being found in violation of the court's injunction, and the court granted the contempt motion filed by the plaintiffs.
Thank you very much, Ken, for sharing this with our listeners. If you want to know more about this, you can go to ipfridays.com/Mr. Softy, ipfridays.com/Mr. Softy. And as many of our listeners might already know, and some don't, the Canadian Trademark Act was reformed, and we have a new Canadian Trademark Act in the world. So we wanted to know more about this, and we have asked an expert in this field. François Larose is partner with Bereskin & Parr, and I had the chance to interview him. I'm excited to be joined by François Larose of Bereskin & Parr today. He's partner with the firm, and he is a real expert with trademarks. We know each other for a long time, and thank you very much for coming up to the show.
Well, thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Shane. Guten Tag.
Why don't you tell our listeners more about yourself and your practice?
As you mentioned, I'm a partner with Bereskin & Parr. Bereskin & Parr is one of the most important IP firms in Canada. I have the pleasure of working with Dan Bereskin, who's very well known worldwide, as well as Cynthia Rowden and many others, really, really important IP lawyers in Canada. I've been with Bereskin for about 7 years now, and I'm working out of the Montreal office in the province of Quebec. And as you mentioned, I'm specialized in trademark prosecutions and litigation, and I also do some copyright opinions, litigation, as well as IP-related agreements and advertising, packaging, and most importantly in Quebec, the Charter of the French Language issues. But most of my practice is related to trademarks.
Very good. Recently, there has been a change in the Canadian trademark law. I think you got a new trademark act. So what are the most important changes in your opinion?
Yeah, first I want to say that it's really funny because the government tabled, filed for two bills to amend the Trademarks Act. One of them has been adopted, but none of them have been implemented yet. So they're not yet in force. What was really funny is that the recent bill to implement new changes, the most important changes since 1953, have been filed through a budget implementation bill, which means that very little consultations were made, and some of those changes came as a surprise. The changes, maybe I could group them in the three groups. The first one, which are really important to your listeners, is are that Canada is finally joining Madrid. So we're going to adopt this classification system. We're going to be joining the Madrid Protocol. And those agreements have been tabled following, as you may be aware, negotiations between Canada and Europe for a free trade agreement. Now, the agreement is not yet signed or enforced. We're still negotiating some of the details. But as part of the negotiations, we agreed to table those trade agreements. The second group, which is very important and unfortunately very controversial in Canada, is Canada's Trademark Act, I'm proud to say, is very good. We rely a lot on use of a trademark because a trademark is supposed to be there to protect the public. So the public knows a shortcut to get to certain goods and services. They can know the source of the goods and services. So a trademark act needs to be used in Canada. Unfortunately, the new changes are going to remove that requirement. So from now on, you won't be, well, as soon as the changes are implemented, of course, it won't be necessary to identify filing grounds. For example, you don't have to say that it's used in Canada or proposed use. And you no longer need to use the trademark to get the registration. So these are pretty big changes. And the third group of changes are all other changes. We're which are quite significant. For example, for the priority claim, it doesn't need to be the priority application doesn't need to be in the country of origin of the applicant. It can be anywhere. So that was a difference between Canada and many countries. We'll be able to file divisional applications. The term for registrations will be coming from 15 to 10 years, as most countries have. The Trademarks Office will be able to initiate on its own decision expungement proceedings against registrations and so on. And also in another bill that's still waiting to be adopted are new anti-counterfeiting measures, stronger anti-counterfeiting measures. They don't go far enough, I think, but it's going to be a lot better for Canada because we were, as you may know, on a blacklist. On the United States puts us on the blacklist because we didn't have a strong anti-counterfeiting measures. Now they removed us from the blacklist because of this bill. So those are the three groups of important changes that are coming up. There are lots more, but we can from now limit ourselves to those.
Okay, what would be the biggest impact for your national clients and for the international clients? I see one immediately, of course, that you will join the Madrid Protocol or the Madrid Agreement. That will be a big change for the international clients as well as your national clients. But are there any changes where you see a big impact, like financial-wise? Do they really have to change their strategy somehow by when filing trademarks? Or can you tell our clients, for example, in Germany or the clients in the US, what they would really have to think about?
I think I'm going to go back again to the use requirement because it's a big, big change for Canada. So it's going to be easier to get a registration in Canada, that's for sure. Like you mentioned, the Madrid Protocol is going to be easier for people outside Canada to file applications in Canada. But since applicants won't need to file a declaration of use or to use a trademark anywhere in the world, it's going to be easier to get a registration. And not only easier to get a registration, but the registration can be broader because you would be able to file for all the goods and services under the sun and still get a registration without even having the real intent of using the mark with all those goods and services. So it's going to be easier to get a registration. Unfortunately, because of that, it's going to be easier for pirates or trademark trolls to also get a registration. So while the registration process will be easier, some legitimate brand owners coming into Canada might find out that their own trademarks are been registered by trademark trolls or pirates in Canada. So this is going to be, we expect there will be higher, a big increase in oppositions. It's going to be more difficult and more expensive to do clearance searches to see if a trademark is truly used. And if it's not, then we're going to have to initiate cancellation proceedings. So although it might look like it's going to be easier and less expensive, we expect that it's going to be eventually more expensive and more complex for brand owners to get a trademark in Canada. So that's a big impact.
So one question related to this. I mean, this sounds similar to the system in Europe where you can get a registration without really using the trademark, but the registrations in Europe are they can be cancelled if they are not used within 5 years from registration. Is there a similar clause in the new Trademark Act in Canada?
Yes, the actual statute already has administrative cancellation proceedings that says that if you don't use a trademark within 3 years, or if you haven't used a trademark in the past 3 years, then you can be asked to prove, to provide evidence of use of the mark, which each of the goods and services. Now, it's 3 years instead of five, so that's even shorter, which is good to get rid of the dead wood. But unfortunately, people will be able to get a registration with all the benefits or any goods or services they want for a trademark that they don't even use for 3 years. So it's going to be, we're going to have, I foresee lots of useless trademarks on the register, and it's going to be more difficult for legitimate brand owners to get their registrations. Of course, we will eventually to get rid of those with the cancellation proceedings, but for 3 years and maybe more, then we'll be stuck with those trademarks on the register.
I see there might be some very interesting case law developing when trademark filers will file every 3 years for some, you know, trademarks that are, you know, trademark trolls or pirates. Maybe they
Absolutely.
Will.
Yeah, definitely right. And I believe in Europe you have more opposition proceedings than you would have in a country that might require use, for example, as a requirement for registration. And we see that we'll have a lot more oppositions.
That's our bread and butter.
Yeah, so, but it's not very nice. It's not very fun for our clients then.
Of course.
Keep seeing those challenges.
I know. So are there any best practice procedures that you developed for your clients or anything that they, you know, have to change immediately?
We don't think the changes are going to be implemented before spring 2015. So we still have a few months ahead of us to get ready, but we never know. We have some recommendations for clients. First would be file now if you want a trademark, because we expect the filing fees to increase. Is it going to be a 3-for-1, like three classes in one application for one prize, or one prize per class? We don't know yet. The government doesn't know yet. But we foresee there are going to be higher filing fees. The more classes you have, the more expensive it will be. So if you have a trademark that you would like to get in Canada, I would suggest you file now. Renewal term are going to decrease from 15 to 10 years. So if a trademark registration in Canada is set to expire within 1 year, I strongly suggest you file to renew the application ASAP to get a longer term for the registration. Because after that, like I said, you're going to be losing 5 years. As well, we have common law trademarks in Canada, which means that if you use a trademark without registrations, you can still have some rights just because you're using it in a specific territory. However, if these are important, I suggest you file applications before the changes are implemented, because after that, pirates are going to be able to file trademark applications for those trademarks, common law trademarks. Then you'll have the burden, the clients will have the burden to oppose those applications. And that can be expensive and a pain in the butt. So I suggest if you have common law marks, now's the time to file applications. And other changes, I didn't mention those, but we're going to have new types of trademarks, signs that are going to be called, like non-traditional trademarks, smell, taste, all those kind of three-dimensional trademarks. We already have the possibility to register those under the current act, but with the new statutes, we're going to need to file distinctiveness evidence. So if a client has a non-traditional mark right now, maybe it would be a good opportunity to consider filing an application now before having to file distinctiveness evidence, acquired distinctiveness evidence in Canada. And maybe a last advice, since it won't be necessary to file a declaration of use for a trademark that's not yet in use in Canada, we have lots, over 40,000 applications, pending applications in Canada, that are just waiting for a declaration of use to issue to registration. With the new changes, it won't be necessary. Those applicants will be invited to just file to pay a registration fee and get the registration right away. But there are going to be so many that will want to file at the same time that I recommend to clients that they just make sure right now review their pending applications and prioritize the most important ones to make sure that as soon as the changes are implemented, request registration for those marks and avoid the huge traffic of applicants that will want to get their registration issued. Because there are going to be a lot of busy examiners at the trademarks office for the first few months, and it's going to delay registration certificates for sure.
I understand. I have one question regarding the Canadian trademark law. In the past, you wouldn't be able to get a trademark registered if so and so many people would be called like this as their with their last name. Is that still will that still be there?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen a change regarding name and surnames. But you can still get those registrations under certain circumstances. For example, if you file evidence of acquired distinctiveness, if a name has become so well known that it has become a trademark in the mind of customers, then it's possible with some evidence to get a registration. Another possibility is that if it's a name or a surname that's not very common, and the trademarks office will use a test of looking through the phone book, and if they find less than 25 persons with the same name, then they won't consider it as merely a name or a surname. So that's how we got some registration for famous brand designer, clothing designers. They can get registration if we can show the trademarks office that there are less than 25 persons in Canada with the same name. So it's still possible to get a registration for a name or surname under certain circumstances. And I will have to look through the bill, but I don't think there's any changes regarding that.
Okay. So if people want to get in touch with you, what would be the best way to reach you?
You can look up our website, bereskinandpar.com, or you can Google my name, François Larose. You might get many François Larose, but I think my name is one of the first ones on Google.
Yes, you're the first hit.
Okay, I have to look on Bing as well. Maybe I'm one of the first, I can't say. But usually just try our website, and I'll be happy to attend to any of your listeners' needs.
Thank you very, very much for this very helpful interview. And dear listeners, please contact François if you have any questions regarding the Canadian Trademark Act.
Thank you, Ralph. Thank you.
So if you want to know more about François, you can go to www.ipfridays.com/Larose, LAROSE, ipfridays.com/Larose. And coming up next is the latest development in the Budweiser fight. As you might know, there is a Czech Republic company, Budweiser, and a US company, Budweiser. And Ken has all the latest about this.
Ralph Anheuser-Busch InBev is the world's largest brewing company, making 400 hectoliters of beer annually while employing 150,000 workers. The multinational company was formed from the 2008 merger of Anheuser-Busch, America's largest brewer, with InBev, a similarly gigantic brewing company with roots in Belgium and Brazil. Anheuser-Busch InBev, or AB InBev for short, now brews many of the most well-known beers from around the world. Corona, Stella Artois, Beck's, Michelob, Rolling Rock, Löwenbräu, Modelo, and many more. Their most conspicuous product is the self-proclaimed King of Beers, Budweiser, which Anheuser-Busch has been brewing since 1876. Unknown to many in the United States, there is a challenger to the throne occupied by the King of Beers, another beer named Budweiser, brewed by a Czech Republic company named Budweiser Budvar. The company is based in a town formerly known as Budweis, when the Czech Republic was part of the Austrian Empire. The name Budweiser is derived from this town. Budweiser means from Budweis in German. The Czech company began brewing their Budweiser in 1785 and started exporting to America in 1871, 5 years before Anheuser-Busch began production of its Budweiser beer. The company, which to this day remains owned and operated by the Czech government as a relic of communism, is very small in comparison to the Anheuser-Busch InBev global conglomeration. With only 600 employees and a beer production that totals 0.35% of the amount of beer produced by AB InBev. Both companies export and sell their Budweiser products throughout the global market, leading to numerous country-by-country clashes over which company gets local trademark rights in the Budweiser name. The issue appears settled, for now, in the company's respective home markets. American tourists visiting Europe may be surprised to discover that the Budweiser they are familiar with is actually sold as Bud in many European countries. And Budvar sells its product as Czechvar in the United States and Canada, while retaining the Budweiser name throughout much of Europe. However, the issue of who gets to use the Budweiser name remains a live controversy throughout much of the world. While the relative sizes of the two companies appear to put the Czech brewer at a disadvantage, Anheuser-Busch has lost several key cases recently. In Portugal last month, the trade courts prevented Anheuser-Busch from registering its Budweiser name in that country. In Italy, Budvar had been forced to use the Czechvar name since 2002, but last year secured a ruling rejecting Anheuser-Busch's trademark and allowing Budvar to once again use the Budweiser name. Also, interestingly enough, the United Kingdom Supreme Court decided there is no confusion between the two beers in the English marketplace, and has allowed both companies to use the trademark throughout the United Kingdom. There are signs that AB InBev will eventually get its way. In 2012, the conglomerate purchased a small Czech competitor of Budvar, also located in historic Budweis, for the trademark rights owned by that brewery. That same year, Anheuser-Busch made a global settlement offer to Budvar for the rights to the Budweiser name. A similar settlement was reached between the two in 1939, which gave Anheuser-Busch the right to use the name in Central and North America, before globalization led both beer makers to expand worldwide. However, this most current offer was rejected by Budvar, and those negotiations are now over. Another potential end to this dispute would be the long-rumored sale of Budvar by the Czech government through a public stock sale. For now, though, the century-old battle over the trademark rights to a Czech town-turned-beer name continues.
Thank you very much, Ken. And if you want to know more about this case or the latest developments, please visit www.ipfridays.com/Budweiser. ipfridays.com/Budweiser.
That's it for this episode. If you liked what you heard, please show us your love by visiting ipfridays.com/love and tweet a link to this show. We would be so grateful if you would do that. It would help us out to get the word out. Also, please subscribe to our podcast at ipfridays.com or on iTunes or stitcher.com. If you have a question or want to be featured in one of the upcoming episodes, please send us your feedback at ipfridays.com/feedback. Also, please leave us a review on iTunes. You can go to ipfridays.com/iTunes, and it will take you right to the correct page on iTunes. If you want to get mentioned on this podcast or even have comments within the next episode, please leave us your voicemail at ipfridays.com/voicemail. You have been listening to an episode of IP Fridays. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, their respective law firms. None of the content should be considered legal advice. The IP Fridays podcast should not be construed as legal advice or legal opinion on any specific facts or circumstances. The contents of this podcast are intended for general informational purposes only, and you are urged to consult your own lawyer on any specific legal questions. As always, consult a lawyer or patent or trademark attorney. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved.